Tap into the passion and vision of well-known entertainment luminaries with Thinking Out Loud. Go on a journey with unfiltered access to today's media innovators. Hear their strategy for rising above the crowded landscape. Important lessons and valuable wisdom that only comes from real industry experience.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization focused on the media, entertainment, and technology industry. And today I'm speaking with Will Pearson, Chief Operating Officer for the iHeart Podcast Network. Welcome, Will.
Thank you, Vicki. It's good to be with you.
It's great to be talking to you today. Hey, I couldn't help but notice something really interesting in your background. So I'd like to back up a bit before we jump into what's happening now and next.
Okay.
Most folks probably don't know that back in the day when you were at Duke University, you were the co-founder and president of Mental Floss.
That's right. It was a lifelong passion of mine, accumulating tidbits of knowledge. Some might call it useless knowledge. I just prefer to think of it as really fun stuff to know. A classmate of mine at the time and I sort of shared this love. And being in college at the time was a great time to be thinking about a project like this because we would come back from different classes, whether it was a history class or a biology class, and sharing some of the things that we might have learned in that class, and sort of came up with this idea where we thought, wouldn't it be fun if you could learn a little bit from each of the most interesting classes at a university setting? And even if you weren't an expert, you could pick up the basics and learn a lot of the really fun things from those courses. And that inspired the idea for Mental Floss, which at the time was a university publication that we created on campus at Duke. We had no idea what we were doing. Neither of us had any background other than Mangesh, who was my co-founder, having served on his high school yearbook staff or something along those lines. And so we thought, you know what, let's just give it a shot and we'll start a little publication on campus, and went around to the different departments there and started talking to some of the more interesting professors on campus and created a little campus magazine called Mental Floss, which we decided to name it that because we really wanted a name that communicated that it was smart, but something that was also playful and something that was fun and something that didn't seem too serious. We could all sort of enjoy this quest for knowledge together. And being naive college students, we somehow thought we were qualified to take it from being a campus publication to being a nationally distributed publication. And somehow it all worked out. And we did that for about 15 years. It was a blast.
So that was really your first foray into media.
Right. We were coming straight out of college. We're fortunate enough to talk to everyone we possibly could about the idea for Mental Floss and getting it distributed, and managed to get in front of a couple of distributors. And we're fortunate enough to be able to distribute in places like Barnes and Noble. And you probably remember Borders at the time, which was a similar kind of chain, and able to get the magazine out there. And we felt really lucky that so many people seemed to enjoy it. And so it kept selling and we kept making it and just were able to grow the company from there.
Well, that's terrific. And it went on to become a tremendous success, both under your leadership and then after the two of you sold it. So congratulations. It's always exciting to talk to somebody who's built something of terrific impact and value.
Well, thank you. We enjoy cheering it on from the sidelines even today. It's a lot of fun seeing what the team continues to do.
Let's shift gears and talk about the iHeart Podcast Network. Mm-hmm. You're the COO, so you've got a wonderful landscape view across the entire business. Tell us a little bit about the business, just to level set for our listeners, and then we can dive into more details and some interesting stories.
So to back up just a bit in terms of how we came into the leadership here of the podcast division, about 3 years ago, or a little bit more than that, we talked about Mental Floss before. Mangesh and I, the two of us that had started Mental Floss, were recruited to join a company called Stuff Media, or more publicly known as How Stuff Works, that was associated with a great website and several great podcasts, to come on board to help the company spin off that podcast division to see what we could do with it, because we were starting to see the crossover of podcasts from a niche audience to becoming a more mainstream audience. You had, of course, the success of a few big podcast like Serial that really helped that crossover happen. So we were very intrigued by this and we came on board. And How Stuff Works was a company of about, let's call it 60 or 70 people of similar size to what we were doing at Mental Floss. And there was this bedrock of podcasts that had been started about a decade ago, all based on this foundation of knowledge. So it was an easy jump for us from Mental Floss to How Stuff Works. But a couple of those shows, like Stuff You Should Know, Stuff You Missed in History Class, Tech Stuff. Fortunately, these days, we don't feel like we have to work the word stuff into every title, but those podcasts really were some of the earliest and most successful podcasts out of the gate. And actually, Stuff You Should Know was one of the first, if not the first, podcast to cross a billion downloads on Apple Podcasts several years later, which is just sort of an unfathomable number of downloads. But those podcasts that were really more of an experiment early on, it was a team of great creators, of great writers, of great researchers that just said, you know what, let's try out this new podcast thing and see what happens. And those podcasts became the foundation for an incredible roster of shows that about 3 years ago were doing 40 or 50 million downloads a month across the catalog of, say, 10 different shows that all had such an evergreen catalog that people would go back and listen to. And that's when iHeart, as the largest audio company in America, came along and said, you know what, we also want to be the biggest podcast company in the country or in the world. And so we started having conversations. And about a year after Mangesh and I had arrived at How Stuff Works, we sold to iHeart.
So I'd like to go back to something you said early on when you were talking about Stuff You Should Know and the very early days of podcast impact. Mm-hmm. And back then it was very niche.
Yeah.
And I would imagine the audience that sought it out was quite targeted as well. And now podcasts are really coming into their own and it's cross genre, cross audience. Talk to us a little bit about that evolution. You're one of these rare people who was in it in the beginning and is in it now, and you've seen that transformation take place. Walk us through that a little bit.
Some people tend to think that a transition happened overnight. And I think for those of us that have really watched it up close, you realize it was more inch by inch, but you look back over a decade and you realize how much happened in that period of time. But you're right. When the host of Stuff You Should Know, for example, Josh and Chuck, decided, let's give this thing a shot. It was really just going into a closet in the office at How Stuff Works and recording something that they had no idea would reach any sort of significant listenership, much less 10, 20 people, whatever it would have been. They thought, well, this will just be a great way to extend the life of some of these great articles that have been written on the website on howstuffworks.com. From there, they just started putting something together. They would put out two a week. That is how dedicated they are to doing this. They have never failed to put out an episode because you're right. It was a very niche audience, a very small audience of people that were just interested in checking out this new medium. People that were, I would describe them as knowledge seekers at that point because of the nature of so many of the early podcasts. And started to just build up some momentum. It was very gradual, but every month there would be a few more listeners than there were the month before. And that started to multiply to where 5 years after they had started Stuff You Should Know and Stuff You Missed in History Class, they looked back and they started realizing, holy cow, we're actually starting to see millions of downloads, not just hundreds of thousands of downloads. And it really started to escalate in that growth. And at that point, almost all podcasts were just two people at a mic, two people sitting down, having a conversation. And that's really all Stuff You Should Know has been from the beginning. And part of the beauty of it is in its simplicity, just the two of them, no bells and whistles, with their producer, Jerry, talking about something that was fascinating to them and built an audience that really felt like they knew them. I think that was the thing that's been most surprising to me or most interesting to me coming from other media. You hear this word intimate that may be overused, but it's really pretty accurate in describing that relationship when you feel like you're getting to listen in on a conversation between two friends, just a really fascinating conversation, not a lot of other noise around it, just very simple. You feel like you're in the room with them. And when two people are really good at it, an audience gravitates to it. So that medium is just this very simple format for podcast. And then you had Serial come along a few years ago and sort of turn the medium on its head, because at that point it was more the general chat show style that we talked about, plus many of the NPR and other public radio shows that were also distributing as a podcast. But that was mostly it at that point. And then you see a podcast come along that really turns the medium on its head and makes people realize, oh, this could be a great way to tell stories in a format and in a delivery mechanism that we've never been able to before. And it really got us all thinking differently. And you fast forward a few years from there and you've got huge talent, whether it's Will Ferrell or Shonda Rhimes or others who we are really fortunate to work with now, that have realized the flexibility and the freedom that they have in a form like podcasting to come in and experiment and to try some new and different things. And so it's really fun seeing all the changes that have happened because of creators coming into the medium and deciding really to treat it almost like a playground to try out some new things.
So you mentioned Shonda Rhimes, and she, of course, is a content creator of great acclaim. And you've got someone like that attaching herself to the medium and playing in the space and producing new types of content. But you also mentioned someone like Will Ferrell. You also have the front of camera talent coming in to play in this space as well. Talk to us a little bit about the things that you're seeing, the things that are available on the iHeart platform that people may not even know exist.
Yeah, you're right. It's a lot of fun seeing the range of the kinds of podcasts. So obviously we do have talent like Will Ferrell, who came to us and said, I've got this Ron Burgundy character, this absurd and funny character. I think I'd like to have some more fun with this and not feel the constraints of trying to tightly edit a 2-hour film. So let's see what we could do with it in the podcast space and create some of these ridiculous conversations. And he really loved it because there were no real limitations around it. He got to try out some different things, have some absurd conversations with everyone from Kamala Harris to some more absurd characters that he brought on to the show.
How do you go about deciding what to produce?
Yeah, it's a really good question and one that we discuss every single week, because as the medium explodes, every week we see probably 60 or 70 pitches that come in from agencies to individuals to partners, just all sorts of places. And that's not even counting the ones that may have initially been reviewed by an editor that we've decided not to review with what we call our development team. So we do have a team that's made up of different producers from each of our different offices, where it's really important for us to look and maintain a balance of different backgrounds of all kinds, of making sure that we've got a really good balance of both men and women on the committee and all different ethnic backgrounds, to really make sure that we're thinking about the types of podcasts that we're already producing and that we should be producing. Every week, that team gets together and talks about the pitches that have come in. Each one comes with certain podcasts that they're really excited to pitch to the team, and run through them and debate them and talk about which ones we feel like are worth entering into a negotiation around to try and pursue those to bring into the iHeart family. And we really like to look across a full spectrum of categories, as I mentioned before. And what's so interesting is we look in places like PodTrack, for example. PodTrack is one of the sites or one of the organizations that really measures the success by downloads of different podcasts. And if you look into the PodTrack rankings across all the different categories, we see iHeart has by far more podcasts in the rankings of the various categories across the categories than any other organization. And that's always one of our goals, is to try to maintain that and to be able to find one or two or three really big podcasts in a given category. And what that allows us to then do is to take chances on smaller podcasts that maybe don't have as well known of talent, that we can then promote on those bigger podcasts to give them a better chance at cutting through. But that's really, we talk about it like there's a almost like a secret to the way we promote shows. But to be honest with you, it's no big secret. It's really just having this incredible network that when we launch a new show, we have a huge advantage, because if we're launching a new comedy show, we have a roster of, say, 20, 25 fantastic comedy shows to be able to market these new shows on, so that this audience of self-identified comedy listeners or comedy fans will then be likely to at least check it out and see if they like it. So that's really how we try to build, is to make sure that in each category, we try to find one or two or three real leaders, almost giants in the space, to then help us build that category from.
One of the things that we're now grappling with in the television space, with peak TV, peak streaming, content proliferation, is the search discovery process for viewers. It's very similar now in the audio space. The discovery process can be overwhelming. And exactly. So you just touched on a very interesting aspect by the cross-marketing that goes on and the power that your platform has to offer in that space. Could you talk to us a little bit about what that discovery process looks like, and how are people finding and choosing podcasts?
Yeah, if you think about it, I mean, if we think it's difficult on our TVs, the problem is, or challenge rather, is that much more amplified when we're talking about podcasts, because one, there's simply more of them. And frankly, there are tons of great and brilliantly produced tiny podcasts. How do you find those? It's such a big question. But the other part of it is the vast majority of podcast listening is happening on our phones, on these tiny handheld devices. And it's not as though discovery is super simple when you're opening up a platform like Apple or the iHeart app or Spotify or any of the others that people are frequently using. And so that is a very real challenge. How do you cut through the clutter? That is why we try to make use of the resources that we have. And so by far the most effective mechanism we have to get people to listen to new podcasts is to cross promote on other podcasts. And so every time we launch a new show, we create those 30 and 60 second spots that will run across our network, usually targeted at like-minded shows or like-minded audiences. On top of that, we'll do trailer drops, create trailers, and then we can drop them into the feeds of like-minded shows. We try to do that intelligently and try to do that very intentionally, so that we're not just dropping tons of trailers in everybody's shows, because that wouldn't be a positive listener experience. We try to do it in a way that's actually bringing value to what the listener is experiencing. And then the third lever that we have here that, frankly, I honestly didn't know how effective it would be, is the ability to promote on broadcast radio. There was really this question of how effective will it be to try to bring broadcast radio listeners into the world of podcasting. And as we've learned more and more about that world of radio and the 850 plus radio stations that iHeart has across the country, we've really learned how to market to this audience. The ads are a little bit different. We have a certain image or idea of what a radio ad sounds like, and then what usually a quieter podcast ad sounds like. And so we've learned the tricks of the trade, or just how to produce these types of things to bring people into the medium. And we've seen it be quite effective, actually, to when marketed correctly, to bring big podcasts like a Ron Burgundy or one of our huge true crime launches, or one that's going to be big too coming up really soon here. We've got a podcast related to The Office, which was the most streamed show in the country last year, a weekly show sort of doing a deep dive on the history of The Office that we're launching. That on top of a Shondaland show tied to Bridgerton's, which has just been a massive success. So promoting both of those in the pop culture space on broadcast radio is really, really effective in driving listening. But the challenge is very real.
Well, building a podcast from scratch is clearly a different challenge than building a podcast around any kind of known brand, whether it's a celebrity name or an entertainment brand or an extension of a television show where you already have a built-in audience base of passionate enthusiasts. I can imagine the challenges associated with trying to help start something that has no known equity built into it.
It's true. It's part of the fun, though. We try to balance that out to be able to launch podcasts that we know will find an audience simply because they have a huge name or a huge partner behind them. As we launch a podcast like this companion series to Bridgerton, which launches very soon, we know that that will reach an audience because there's a rabid fan base for it and a big fan base for it. But it's also really fun to try to find this undiscovered talent and to bring something like that into the world. Just a couple of examples of that. We worked with a podcast creator named Jake Brennan, who now in the podcast space is a well-known name, but he had this terrific podcast called Disgraceland, which is at a high level described as musicians behaving badly, where in every episode he'll talk about a well-known musician from the world, typically of rock, and tell their personal story in such an interesting and fascinating way. And Jake came to us with this great podcast and had started to build a following. It was actually pretty impressive what he had built by himself. And we brought him on board here at the iHeart Network and plugged him into what we were doing. And really our job was to get out of the way creatively. The guy was already making a brilliant podcast and we made that clear. We're not here to tell you what to do with the creative side. What we're here to do is to support you by promoting the podcast, making sure people find out about this podcast, and then taking it out to the market on the sales front to help monetize it more effectively. And it really took off, going from being a podcast that was maybe doing 100,000 downloads to one that was doing millions of downloads a month, which was awesome to see. So we love it when we can do that. And we still try to do that a lot. We try to balance that out from the big ones to the ones that are going to be undiscovered talent. And it's a true joy to see it happen.
So let's talk about the big ones for a minute. We're seeing entertainment companies recognizing this new medium as a way to extend their brands, maybe grab ad dollars from a new source, feed the passion of their viewers and fans. What does that look like? How do you go about establishing a partnership with a Viacom CBS or that might result, I think you mentioned the Comedy Central Daily Show podcast, you know, would come out of something like that, or even just identify something like Bridgerton. There's a natural podcast extension and a passion around the audience for more. Talk to us about that process, how that plays out, and also the trends you're seeing in that space right now.
Mm-hmm. Each one is a little bit different. I think what's been really interesting for us to see in the podcast space is the challenges that traditional media companies and legacy media companies have had in breaking through in the podcast space. So if you just stop and think for a second, think of all the legacy media brands that you know have been very successful in some other space, whether that's in television, whether that's in magazines, whether that's in whatever it may be, and try to think about the number of those that have launched really successful podcasts, especially podcasts that share the name of whatever their parent organization or media company was. And it's really a very small list. It's been a very big challenge for these companies to get that crossover from people saying, oh, I'm going to jump from this screen to checking out a podcast, or I'm going to jump from this other media property to checking out their podcast. And so for us, part of the reason many of these discussions happened is you have these big media companies that realize, okay, we know how to make great content. We have access to phenomenally talented people. But what we don't have is the existing audio audience to let people know that these are out there. So it's almost like trying to get a TV show out in the world without the backbone of these major TV channels or a major streaming service. So to have our reach and our ability to know how to market podcasts is really what opened many of the doors with several of the media partners that we work with and know and trust to make amazing content. And once again, kind of like I was saying with somebody like a Jake Brennan, we're not going to go to the Daily Show and tell them how to make a good podcast or tell them how to make good content. They're incredibly funny writers and producers and skilled at what they do. Our job is to help them bring that to an audience. And so from the Daily Show, we're going to be spinning off a few more original podcasts in partnership with Comedy Central. The same thing with MTV as part of the broader Viacom family as well. We're doing some projects with places like Meredith Publishing and we have with Condé Nast. And it's a lot of fun working with these really talented organizations that just need to find a way to break through in podcasting. And maybe to leap from there, some organizations like that, to individuals, to the talent who are out there. When we think of a Shonda Rhimes or we think of a Will Ferrell, sort of a similar situation where you have these incredibly talented people who just really want to partner with somebody that can help make sure that their project gets out in front of the world. And I think a big part of the reason that many people, or I know one of the big reasons many people partner with us, beyond the fact that we've got a fantastic production team of about, let's call it 80 producers and engineers and executive producers around the country helping us create the shows that we make. On top of that, we also have this very strong belief in distributing our podcast as widely as we possibly can. And so our goal is never to take a podcast and put it behind a paywall. I'm not saying that that's a bad strategy for some companies, but it's just been really appealing for a lot of our partners to come to us and know, oh, okay, when I create a podcast with iHeart, it's going to be distributed on Apple, on iHeart, on Spotify, everywhere that podcasts are available. They're not just going to make it exclusive to the iHeart app. And that ability to know that their podcast will go everywhere is very appealing for a lot of this talent.
So explain to us the business model behind that, because it is really an interesting aspect to the iHeart model that exclusivity is not a driver for you. What is the driver for you?
Yeah. Much like we are in the world of broadcast radio, where we want to reach the broadest audience, iHeart through its radio stations and other properties reaches right around 9 out of 10 Americans in any given month, which is just a phenomenal statistic. When we joined the company and learned that and really started looking into the numbers to understand how that works, we're sort of blown away by that. So in the similar spirit, we want to be that for podcasts as well, to know that when we create podcasts, they're going to reach as broad of an audience as possible. And so fortunately, iHeart has an incredible sales team on the advertising front that we can go out to partners and say, hey, we've got this fantastic new podcast. We know that this is an audience that you're trying to reach. We can help you get to them. And so an example of this, a few months back, in partnership with some of our talent and existing team members at iHeart, we launched a network called the Black Effect Podcast Network. We knew that there was a serious lack of podcasts for a Black audience by Black creators and producers. And this was something that we were hearing from our talent and team members here. And so we made a huge commitment to this, to say, you know what, you're right. Let's not just go throw a few podcasts out there and see how they do. Let's actually try to create the biggest network of its kind in the medium. And you fast forward about 6 months, and now part of iHeart is this division called the Black Effect, headed up by a brilliant former MTV producer. She's the president of our network here named Dolly Bishop. And under her leadership, we've now built a network that's doing about 30 million downloads a month across the shows that we've launched together. And so it is the largest of its kind with some of the biggest podcasts in Black culture at the moment. And that's always our goal, to be able to do that and to be able to take those shows to market and to be able to say to advertisers, we know that you are now making a commitment to investing in Black creators and producers and talent. And we're here to tell you that here's an opportunity to do that at a scale that you couldn't find anywhere else. I've never seen anything like it. When we took this offering out to the marketplace, how quickly the team was able to sell those sponsorships. So that's really the business model, is to build these slates and these families of podcasts that either share a common audience or a common mission, and then to be able to go find advertising partners that are eager to get behind those and support those and attach to those in any way that they can.
Are you finding any preferences among listeners for the ad-supported versus non-ad-supported podcast environment? Because obviously that's a big point of evolution in the television ecosystem right now.
It definitely is. I mean, I think it's worth stepping back and thinking about why the television industry changed in the way that it did and why streaming outlets emerged in the way that they did. Usually you see transformation in an industry like that because there's something broken about the industry. And it really was becoming a challenge trying to get these shows out to people. The advertising experience wasn't all that great. Sometimes people felt overwhelmed by the amount of advertising and sitting down to watch what they wanted to be a half hour show that was filled with ad breaks every few minutes. If you think about it in the podcast space, and we're very intentional about this, even when our shows are, say, an hour or hour and a half long, we still commit to having two ad breaks in almost all of our shows. Mid-roll breaks is how we would describe them. So you've been listening to the show for 15 minutes or so, and you might have a break then, and then you listen for another 15 minutes and you have a break then. It's really not an incredibly intrusive ad experience. And what we found, because the vast majority of ads are host read, that it actually becomes a pretty fun way for our listeners to hear from and interact with the host of these shows. It's a ton of fun to hear Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy read ads about Charmin toilet paper. I mean, it's just a ridiculous and funny experience. Or to hear a more serious host read an ad for something that means something to them. And we find that most of our hosts really like to, not surprisingly, read ads for companies that mean something to them, that they care about, and that they can actually speak from a degree of experience around what's being offered in the ad. And it's done in a pretty quick and easy manner. And so for the world of podcasting, it's just not an experience that we find readers to have much of a problem with. And so when we talk about taking things behind a paywall, I think the real question is, one, is there really a problem that they were trying to solve for a listener? And two, how frustrating is it for a listener if there's a talent or a show that they want to hear to feel like they're being told where they have to go consume it? It'll be interesting to see how it all evolves. I won't pretend to know exactly where this will be in 10 years, but for us, part of the fun of the podcast industry is being able to know these shows are out there, and whatever platform that you're on and like to listen to shows, to know that you can go to that platform and listen to the show you've been seeking.
It's really a fascinating business, and you've illuminated a lot of different parts of it for us. I'm fascinated to hear you have over 500 podcasts that you're distributing a month. That's just enormous. And so is it a correct assumption that there's an audience for every podcast, or do you launch a podcast and find that there really isn't an audience for it? And then what? Does all of this content continue to live out there, or are you continually curating the ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question. I wish I could pretend that every single podcast that we launch is successful and finds a great audience. There definitely are podcasts that don't make it. Maybe we put them out there for a couple of seasons, and for whatever reason, sometimes surprising that they just don't build a huge audience. But we would rather play some bets and take some chances on shows that we aren't certain will find an audience, but where we really think the idea is interesting and we want to see what will happen with them. When they don't work out, the vast majority of the time, we still leave the podcast out in the world so that listeners can and may still discover it. And we also launch podcasts, for that matter, sometimes that we know might not find a huge audience, but we feel that what they're doing is really important and that the audience they do reach really values and needs and wants what they are bringing to them.
So let's talk about the audience for a second. Are there segments out there who are gravitating more towards podcasts than other audience segments? Or is there something for everyone, and now we've reached a point where everyone is really starting to find that something that they enjoy?
It's true that there is something for everyone, but there's not enough for everyone, for sure. As we look at the marketplace, one of our goals, and especially in seeing the tremendous success of something like The Black Effect, as we talked to creators who wanted to come on board there, and create shows. And frankly, the language that we were hearing often from creators is they wanted to come into what felt like a safe space to create the shows that they wanted to create, to feel like they weren't being told what their show should be, to give them that, to give them that as part of a network. One of the next areas that we're looking at is the Latinx space in the United States. The number of podcasts and the number of podcast listeners are far underpacing what you would see in terms of the general population of the Latinx community. I think it's in the high teens in terms of the percentage of those in the US who would be in the Latinx community. And yet the percentage of podcast listeners is far smaller than that. And I think that's because there's not a truly diverse and robust enough offering for that community. And so it's one of our big goals. One of the things that we'll be doing this year, we brought on a head of that slate, a young woman named Giselle Bonches, that is going to be helping us flesh this out. And she's got a fantastic team under her. And we're well underway in building this out, and we'll be rolling it out in a more robust way in the months to come. So yeah, as we look at things like that, there are definitely audiences that are not being served appropriately or at a high enough level in the podcast space. But I won't pretend that there aren't tons and tons of podcasts out there. So in many ways, it does feel like, especially when you get super niche, that's part one of the fun parts about it, is to sort of do a search to say, I'm really wondering whether there is a podcast that just super dedicated to only talking about the War of 1812 or just something like that. And you do a search for it, and sure enough, there it is. That is also one of the fun parts of this.
So I wondered then, TV programs obviously have also gone way more niche, and there are such important efforts being made towards programming for a more diverse audience than historically in the earlier days of television, where it was all about mass audience. Mm-hmm. Is it reasonable then to assume that we may continue to see more of these entertainment brand partnerships to leverage the existing viewing audience towards the podcast niche programming?
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely see it going in that direction, whether it's, as we were talking about, our partnerships with places like Viacom, to our partnership with parts of Warner Media and specifically HBO Max, where they've had over 100 brand TV shows and documentaries and other IP that's out there. And so they've seen big success with some of their companion podcasts like Chernobyl and McMillions and Watchmen and some of the others. And so they were really looking to us to help us extend that universe of some of their top titles on HBO Max. We have signed a 10-show deal with them. We've already produced a few shows with them, one Raised by Wolves, The Murders at White House Farm, one called Search Party, and we've got a few more coming out in the next few months. It's a two-way thing. It's a way to be able to take the existing super fan base of a property and move them into podcast, but it's also a way to go in the other direction, to launch a podcast to help people discover really interesting IP and move them from the podcast into checking out the TV or streaming series. I think we'll see much more of that, simply because there's so much flexibility, because you can either make something truly a companion podcast and have it either be a conversation around whatever the show or film was, or you can have it be an extension of that, to be able to say, let's take this universe. And that's where things are getting really interesting, is taking that universe of a scripted project and moving it into podcasting as a scripted project. It's going to be a lot of fun over the next year or two to see how this continues to evolve.
So what else would you flag to us to watch in terms of what's next? What else do you see coming? I think what you just said is very interesting. The scripted universe is going to evolve, and we can see the fictional serial approach start to get rooted. What else? What else is on your radar screen?
Well, a couple of things that'll be interesting to see is just the experience of audio and how we're experiencing it. So we're investing a lot in and experimenting with some shows for 3D audio, to not have the sort of flat audio experience of simply hearing everything in the same way that you would hear from one show to the other, of really working to develop audio with special recording devices that allow us to capture a more 3D feel, especially in our narrative style shows that are really doing a lot of storytelling and the scripted stories. that can make you actually feel like you're in the place of a car pulling into a garage or rain or whatever you may think of, that to have that full, almost surround sound feel to what we're doing. And then I think the other thing, which is something we've already started to experiment a little bit with, is what it means to be a podcast. This idea that I said before, that 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, a podcast was always two people sitting down at a microphone talking about a thing. That's what a podcast was. And it went for 45 minutes. Actually, in the earlier days, it felt like all podcasts were much longer than that. But I think what we'll start to see happening is realizing there's so much flexibility in podcasts that we've experimented with a lot of daily shows that are 5 minutes long. Those are two things I think I would watch for, and we're excited to pursue on both fronts.
Well, Will, you have certainly provided an outstanding experience in audio for us today. Thank you for expanding our ideas about what's happening and what's going to be happening in the podcast world. It's all really interesting and exciting, and it's been a pleasure talking to you about it.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate your interest in the space and look forward to hearing more of your episodes.
Well, it certainly sounds to me like it's all converging and we're all going to be in the same space inevitably anyway. So it's fun to be at the forefront of that happening right now.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you so much, Vicki. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.